This is Josh Findlay with the Texas Public Policy Foundation's National Election Protection Project, where we talk all things election integrity. Today, we've got a guest that I am extremely excited to hear from, and I think it's something that our listeners will be very interested in as well. The thing that we're going to talk about today explains a lot of unanswered questions for Republicans and for conservatives. Our topic for today is going to explain why Republicans keep losing races, even though we're right on the issues, like border security, the economy, defund the police, and everything else we've seen for the last couple of years. It's going to explain why leftist policies like defund the police that seem outrageous to normal citizens, to your average American, keep getting traction. It also is going to explain why issues like excuses, I would say, like candidate quality, don't hold water when we talk about why Republicans keep losing races. Our guest today is Scott Walter, president of the Capital Research Center. Scott, it's great to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Josh.
Perfect. By way of introduction, can you just tell us a little bit about the Capital Research Center and what you guys are working on?
Sure. The Capital Research Center exists to investigate the special interests affecting elections and public policy. And we especially are good at following the money, which I know is something we're going to spend a lot of time today talking about.
That's exactly right. Campaign finance and election integrity. That's the topic. So let's start out. Can you tell us how the left finances their operations?
Sure, Josh. The first thing that I always begin with when I'm explaining how the left and its preferred political party, the Democrats, function. For at least two decades, the nonprofit tail has wagged the Democratic Party dog. It is enormously more important who is the head of Arabella Advisors, or the head of the Soros Open Society Foundation, or the Ford Foundation, than it is whoever happens to be chairing the DNC this afternoon. And one of the ways, if you'll let me rattle on for a moment here, one of the ways I like to prove that is with what I call the three rivers of political money, right? There are three rivers of money that empty into the Gulf of elections. Now, the first river is what everybody thinks of, so-called hard dollars. That's when you write a check to a candidate or a political party or one of their committees. The second river is so-called soft dollars. Now, that includes the original definition of dark money, which is the 501c4 groups, which are things like Planned Parenthood Action Fund, Democratic Socialists of America, National Rifle Association. Those are the C4 dark money groups. Soft dollars also includes the super PACs. The third river, though, that only the Capital Research Center has been good about studying in depth is what we call public policy 501c3 giving. Now, 501c3s are private foundations and public charities. So the Ford Foundation or Soros' Open Society Foundation. Charities, in this case, we don't mean all charities. We don't mean your house of worship. We don't mean the Salvation Army and Goodwill. We only mean the charities that are actually engaged in public policy, advocacy groups, think tanks like mine, et cetera. Those folks who actually are trying to engage in public policy, including election policy and election administration. Now, the thing to understand is the size of those rivers. In the 2020 cycle, the hard dollar amount for both sides, both years of the cycle, 19 and 20, and both sides, it's around $14.5 billion. The soft dollars, which is not just dark money, but also super PACs, around $3.5 billion. So enormously smaller than the hard dollars. But the two of them are dwarfed by way north of $30 billion in the charity world. Okay, so, and the split, by the way, I brought a little prop for you here I'll leave behind. The partisan split in that 2020 cycle, in the hard dollars, it's about 60-40 in favor of the Democratic Party. In the soft dollars, it's about 54-46 in favor of the Democrats and the left. Some of that's not partisan, some of it's just general left and right. So a smaller left-wing advantage there. But in the case of the public policy C3s, it's better than 10 to 1. better than 10 to 1. And by the way, this didn't even include the Zuck Bucks for a complicated methodological reason. But here's the thing. It wouldn't have made a serious difference because Zuck Bucks were less than half a billion, and this is more like 34 billion. So, you know, it wouldn't even really make that much of a difference. Now, to give you that in scale, here are those three rivers. You can see just how big they are and their relative importance. So all soft money, dark money plus super PACs, is this speck. Hard dollars are about the size of a silver dollar. And then the Death Star, the size of a salad plate, is the public policy C3s. And by the way, so-called campaign finance reforms, right, are trying to squeeze money out of the two skinny little rivers that already don't have that much by comparison. And they completely leave untouched the C3 river, which is massively bigger, massively more Democrat and left-wing skewed.
That's an incredible statistic. But let's break that down a little bit for the audience. You're talking about foundations here, but we're talking about politics. Why is it relevant to talk about what these foundations are doing in the context of politics?
Well, and actually, although most of the money starts in the private foundation side of the 501c3 world, the actual stats I'm giving you are only the spending by the charities, the 501c3 charities, like my think tank. We're one little tiny, very tiny dot in that giant pie. So the reason that it matters, though, is because the foundations and the charities that they're the main funders of are, in fact, heavily engaged, not just in issue advocacy. Now, if I was with a left-wing lawyer here, his first thing would be to say, whoa, the 501c3s, they're just doing issue advocacy. They're allowed to be for or against abortion, for or against school choice.
Which they're allowed to do under the law.
Yes, and that is actually, that's completely legal, and that's fine. I've worked at multiple think tanks, and folks at those think tanks expressed opinions on various issues. But the other thing that the 501c3s are doing, at least on the left side of the spectrum, is they are heavily engaged in get out the vote efforts. Now, even that, the nonprofit world is very complicated and messy in its legal framings. It is even legal, though most Americans, I think, would be shocked to learn it's legal, but it is, in theory, legal for a private foundation to fund and a charity that gets the funds to execute voter registration, voter education, even get out the vote work, provided it's entirely in a nonpartisan manner. And in fact, the IRS, not if you go to their website, don't take my word for it, go to their website, they will say, not only can you not intend, if you're a charity doing this, you cannot intend to help a particular candidate or party, you cannot even have the effect of helping one candidate or party.
So what that means essentially is even if one of these foundations were to say, we're going to engage in this voter registration activity, it is going to be nonpartisan, but the effect is a partisan effect, that should not be okay under the rules of the IRS.
According to what they put on their own website, yes, that is crystal clear. And by the way, a quick side note on this, the main law governing all of the nonprofit sector's political restrictions comes from the 1969 Tax Reform Act. Now, the reason that act was passed by a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House is because the Democrats were outraged that the Ford Foundation had spent over $600,000 for targeted voter registration in a Cleveland mayor's race a year or two before. Now, by the way, I did the math, $600,000 in 67 would now be like $1 billion. It was a staggering amount of money. Right. Left, right, and center acknowledged that Ford's candidate won because of Ford's voter registration. And Democrats in both houses of Congress were so outraged, they set up the rules that have been slightly adjusted over the years, but are the still basic framework, comes from Democrat response to the Ford Foundation getting its preferred Democrat elected to mayor of Cleveland.
So I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but what we're saying essentially is that Democrats are using these foundations to do get out the vote activity, voter registrations, policy education, things like that, that even if they say it's nonpartisan, it has a partisan effect.
Yes.
What is the right doing then?
Well, there is an irony here. I have testified multiple times to Congress about these issues in the House and Senate. And before one of the testimonies, I called up Karl Rove because he has done, you know, whether you are a fan or not a fan of Karl Rove, it doesn't matter to me. He has spent more money to register and get out the vote for Republicans than anybody alive. And I asked him if he had ever used C3 money to fund it, C3 Foundation money to fund it, or C3 groups to carry it out. And you know what the answer was? 10 seconds of silence. Not only has he never done that, he's never dreamt of doing that, and didn't have any idea that his counterparts for the other party had been doing that for two decades. Now, I also can tell you that the other boogeyman for the left, when it comes to conservative turnout and political spending and all, is, you know, the Charles Koch's network of nonprofits and the rest. Well, I looked into that as well, and I can tell you that they have never used C3 money to fund or C3 groups to carry out voter registration and other get out the vote work. And they haven't done it because when they look at the fairly clear laws governing this, they see that it wouldn't really be legal. And they infer, I think, quite reasonably, and again, whether you're like or dislike the Kochs, it doesn't have anything to do with this. It's just they don't do it because they're scared that the Lois Lerners of the world, famous IRS partisan employee, would come after them and tear them apart for what appears to be legal violations. The left, however, being left means never having to say you're sorry. So they've been doing it for at least two decades.
Right. So this is interesting. So the right is getting outspent 10 to 1 with this essentially new category of money that can be spent on politics. In addition to adding all of this money to the ecosystem, what are the other advantages to funding foundations as opposed to traditional political parties or political entities, candidates?
Well, first of all, despite my best efforts, it seems to have been successful in flying under the radar. I was testifying just last month to the House Administration Committee, which deals with election issues. And the Democrat ranking member on the committee had the last word for the hearing. And he was chuckling, I'm sure sincerely, he was chuckling saying, come on, it was Zuckbucks was the main topic of the hearing. And he was chuckling and, you know, and dismissing the idea like, well, it's just crazy. If Mark Zuckerberg wants to help Democrats get elected, well, he wouldn't waste his money on, you know, election administration. He'd give money to candidates, you know, come on. So I'm sure he was sincere, which means he was sincerely ignorant, because in fact, the left's own smartest people say that this is their most effective weapon for winning elections.
So talking about the left's smartest people, I'm going to bring up a last name here for you, Bankman-Fried. When I say that, a lot of people think about cryptocurrency and tech entrepreneurs. When I tell you that last name, what comes to mind for you, Scott?
Well, what comes to mind to me is not Sam Bankman-Fried, the crypto billionaire that was, but rather Mommy Bankman-Fried. His mother, Stanford law professor, who therefore should know better, founded, and until things got really embarrassing with Sonny, was still leading, a super PAC by the name of Mind the Gap. By the way, our influencewatch.org website, you can go get much more info on it. But the short version is that Mind the Gap super PAC had a confidential memo that got leaked that they had put together for mega donors like Sammy and other Silicon Valley billionaires. And it was very it was their 2020 strategy memo. And it was very clear. The most effective way to spend your money in this election is not to waste it by giving it to Biden for president or the Democratic National Committee. The most effective way to achieve Democrat victories, their words, was targeted C3 charity voter registration. And they said you had to be careful about it. And they only gave two C3s that they recommended you give the money to, plus a C4 that's a sister group of one of them. And that was the Voter Participation Center and the Voter Registration Project. Now, in 2024, they put together a new strategy memo, and I'm happy to say it also leaked. In both cases, Teddy Schleifer of PUC, no conservative, was the one who got the memos. And the same thing in 2024. Once again, we are recommending that the effective way to win elections in 2024 up and down the ballot is targeted C3 voter registration. And this time, they only had one charity that they recommended, the Voter Registration Project. Now, if you go to capitalresearch.org, our main site, and type in Voter Registration Project, you can find our in-depth study showing the, at this point, nearly $200 million that have gone into this. There was about $120 million that went in through the 2020 election. And it was, again, it went through Voter Registration Project and then went out to dozens of on-the-ground groups in the battleground states. It was barely a half dozen states that they were doing it, and all they were doing was registering the right people for the Democratic Party to be able to win the election. And I regret to say that as of the end of 2022, which is the last public disclosure they've had to make, at the end of 2022, they had raised almost another $100 million and had over 40 employees just blocks from where we're sitting right now that are operating in the 2024 election. So you thought you knew about Zuckbucks, and they're real and they're bad, and I know we're going to get into that. But on top of the $450 million in Zuckbucks in 2020, you also had $120 million from the Voter Registration Project. So the left has been doing this for decades. They are extremely skilled and talented. And of course, the big foundations are overwhelmingly left-wing. You know, when you add up the endowments of Ford and Open Society and Bauman and on, all those groups, it dwarfs the so-called conservative foundations like, you know, the Bradley Foundation, the Scave Foundation, that sort of thing.
That's incredible. Those numbers that you talked about are just shocking. I'd like to add a couple of things for our listeners also, and correct me if I'm wrong on any of these, but other advantages to donating to these foundations, to funding these foundations, in addition to creating a new pie that money can be taken out of and maybe some of the transparency issues. One, I think there are tax advantages to donating to a foundation. So the money that you donate goes farther if you're a donor. Campaigns spend every dime they have and then they end, right? They go away. If you're funding foundations, you can fund projects that are going on perpetually, right? Between cycles, beyond cycles, things like that. So it allows just another level of maybe professionalism and permanence that the right doesn't have. So are those also kind of advantages?
You are absolutely right. And shame on me for not mentioning that the 2020 Mind the Gap Super PAC strategy memo that said you need to be doing, this is where you want to put your money if you're a smart billionaire. They literally crunched the numbers and they said after taxes, because of course you get your tax deductions for when you send your money in this route, after taxes, 6 to 10 times the votes per dollar that you would have versus being stupid and giving to Biden for president.
That's incredible.
6 to 10 times. And by the way, the other thing, speaking of the illegality of all this, my favorite part of that report at capitalresearch.org on the Voter Registration Project is we combed through the disclosures of foundations and also donor advised fund providers. So like community foundations that give donor advised funds for donors, because it works the same way. That's all 501c3 money. Zuckbucks all came from Zuckerberg's donor advised fund at the Silicon Valley Community Foundation. So you have them donating money to lefty charities, quote unquote. And in the little memo line that they file with the IRS, you know, they have to tell the IRS, we gave Voter Participation Center $1 million. But there's also a little memo line to say what it was for. And we found foundation after foundation, donor advised fund provider that put in the memo line for Mind the Gap voter registration program or something similar. So they're literally saying, we are funding a super PAC's effort, which is wildly illegal for a C3 to do. We're funding a super PAC's effort. Now, they didn't write the check to the super PAC. They wrote the check to the charity the super PAC told them to do. So I'm not a lawyer, and this kind of case has never come up because, of course, the IRS would never enforce its rules against people like this. But, you know, it is conceivable that in a court of law, you could skate through maybe by being able to say, well, I didn't write a check to the super PAC or wrote a check to the charity. But since they were accomplishing the super PAC's partisan efforts, I think we can say something's a little less than kosher here. And by the way, let me jump to say, I don't, I've said this in testimony to multiple committees in Congress, this does not mean that I'm actually calling for more IRS enforcement, because we have to be very sober and realistic. Lois Lerner and people like her are always going to be running the IRS. The solution is not to force the IRS to have more enforcement, because it's never going to be fair. Instead, there's a simpler solution, and that is Congress can simply say that private foundations may not fund and public charities may not carry out any voter registration and get out the vote kinds of work. Now, I don't think that's a wonderful solution. Churches in America traditionally have been, black churches, white churches, mixed race, you know, all sorts of churches have been very engaged in these things. And that's not crazy. And I'm not dying to crush that. In fact, I'm on record opposing the so-called Johnson Amendment, which says that churches and synagogues, mosques, when clergymen are preaching, that they're not allowed to say something like candidate X is a scoundrel or candidate Y is saintly. I actually am much in favor of free speech, unlike our left-wing friends. So I don't think that that should be, I think that clergymen have rights to free speech as well. But it's one thing to talk about speech. It's another thing to talk about complex actions like all that's involved in registering voters and getting them to the polls. And we have plenty of groups in America, left, right, and center, partisan groups, nonpartisan groups, tons of them, that all could still help people register and help people get to the polls without having charities doing this. Because what you're really doing is you're politicizing the charitable sector and ruining the charitable sector, which is an incredibly valuable sector when it's actually charitable. That's the glory of the charitable sector, is it's when where we come together and help each other. And that's magnificent. And America arguably has the strongest such civil society that's ever been seen on earth. And it's key to the America's exceptional success as a country. And destroying that sector by politicizing it is a terrible thing. So you can simply make it illegal. By the way, there is a related bill. Congresswoman Claudia Tenney, who heads the House Election Integrity Caucus, has a bill that would make what Zuckbucks, we'll get into Zuckbucks in a second, but she would make that activity by charities forbidden. And that's also not a bad way to try to get at some of this problem. We can get in Zuckbucks next if you like, but that's obviously slightly different than what we're talking about here, where charities are registering voters and getting them to the polls.
So that's perfect. Let's go ahead and talk about Zuckbucks.
Sure. The important thing to understand first about Zuckbucks is that it first started in the 2020 cycle, but it was actually just a new level of what we've been talking about, right? I've been saying that foundations and charities have been doing this partisan work against the law for at least two decades. There's a 2012 book, The Victory Lab, by a liberal reporter, does a beautiful job reporting on how this goes way back. In fact, he's very damning on one of the groups that Mind the Gap super PAC told its Democrat mega donors, you should give money to the Voter Participation Center. Well, in the book in 2012, he says the Voter Participation Center, then under a different name, but same group, officially, it was nonpartisan for tax purposes, which is to say it would be illegal under tax law not to be, But everybody knew that, and I quote, the goal of all its efforts was finding new Democratic voters. Okay, so great book. Again, so this goes back decades. They've been doing this in the charitable sector for decades. But there were two ways that Zuckerbucks, however, supercharged this existing effort to manipulate elections and turnout. First of all, Zuckerbucks was just far more money. As I said, it would appear that roughly $100 million per cycle, $100 million a cycle was sort of the standard left-wing doing of this. There's a memo to George Soros and the other board members of his largest foundation from back in 2011 that shows all sorts of foundations kicking in, Ford and Bauman and on, Wellspring. All these groups are kicking in for about $85 million. In that cycle. As I said, the voter registration project in 2020 was about $120 million. So that's, whereas Zuckerberg gives $420 million. So he's quadrupling the size. And so that's one way that Zuckerbucks supercharged this. The other way that it supercharged it is where the money went. What we've previously been talking about are foundations and donor advised funds giving to left-wing charities that then do partisan get out the vote work. In the case of Zuckerbucks, the money did not go to private charitable groups. It went directly into government election offices at the state and local level, thousands of them. So that was what made Zuckerbucks different. Now, the next thing to say is that Capital Research Center has crunched the numbers for all of the battleground states, plus a few others, including Texas, which, given that we're here under Texas auspices, I'll mention a couple of those stats. But it's the same in every single, we did about 10, 11 states. Absolutely the same pattern in all of these critical states, like Texas, like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan. In all the battleground states, the money went very disproportionately to Democrat jurisdictions. Every single time. There's none of those states where it's less than 75% of the money going to Biden districts, right? And in the case of Nevada, it's all the way to 100%. And the others are in between. The second thing is that you see in the funded parts of the state, because they didn't fund the entirety of any state. They funded some jurisdictions in almost all the states. In those states, you see that the growth in turnout in the funded part of the state is much bigger than the growth in turnout in the rest of the state. Because it's true, 2020 turnout was big. It went up. It went up almost everywhere. Went up for both parties. But the funding clearly had a dramatic effect for the Democratic Party. Where that funding went. Easy example is one of the battlegrounds is Arizona. In the unfunded parts of the state, the Republican turnout was actually about 4 points higher in 2020. I'm misspeaking. If you're comparing the 2016 presidential to the 2020 presidential, in the unfunded parts of Arizona, the Republicans and Democrats both went up, but the Republicans beat the increase of the Democrats by 4 percentage points. So in other words, there's a four point margin for the Republicans in the unfunded part of the state in this increase, right? So they did better. But in the funded parts of Arizona, it's wildly more for the Democrats. So it's a little bit, so when the funding did increase, the funded parts of the state saw Republican turnout increase a little more even than it did in the rest of the state, a little bit more. But for the Democrats, massively more. You probably remember the number better than I do, but the margin in Arizona was not exactly large. And right. You see the same thing, Georgia, a very tiny margin. In fact, one of the other ways to look at this is, what was the Democrat margin in these battleground states in the funded parts of the state versus the entire state, okay? In the case of Georgia, it was over 50 times in the funded part of the state, the Democrat margin, than the statewide margin. So however you want to crunch these numbers, and let me get you your Texas numbers.
So please this, do. I was just going to ask.
Which are a great example of this, right? First of all, the amount of money overall that went into Texas from the Zuck Bucks was around $40 million. And only 5.5% of that went to jurisdictions that were won by Trump. So 5.5% of that 40 or so million went to Trump jurisdictions. And the other 94.5% went to Democrat jurisdictions. But now, one of the objections often raised is, now, oftentimes this money went to the big cities, which is very true. It was critical to their Democrat turnout to put it in big cities. So does Houston get more money than some incredibly rural rancher county, in an obscure part of the state? Of course, sure. Houston and Dallas should get more than a county that has more cows than people. Totally fair. So there is, however, a very simple way using arithmetic to adjust for that. You look at the per capita funding. How much for every man, woman, and child? Right? Because there will still be far more money in Dallas and Houston and whatnot, but more per person? Well, yes, actually, if you're talking about Zuck Bucks, yes. The statewide average in Texas in the funded counties that Trump wins, 66 cents per capita.
Okay.
And in the Biden jurisdictions, over $2. So triple the per capita funding. Now, there's a really funny side note on this, right? There still are people, now that we've made this argument, and the left is always trying to come up with something, right? It's more expensive to do this in cities for some reason, right? Now, again, I testified just last month at the House Administration Committee, and the Democrat witness who was brought in was an expert in the funding of elections. That's all he does, is study how you fund and administer elections. And his written testimony to the committee was very clear to say, actually, rural counties typically need more per capita than urban counties, which makes perfect sense. If you're trying to get people to vote across some gigantic Texas county with its mostly cows, yeah, that's not as easy as people who just have to walk a few blocks to vote.
Right.
Totally understandable. So, according to the Democrats' own witnesses in a hearing on Zuck Bucks, you should have more money in rural counties. In no state was there anything even remotely equal in rural versus urban counties.
Not one state.
None of the battleground states. Now, we didn't do they funded like 48 states. We didn't crunch every state's numbers. We do have all the data on our website if you want to see that. We also have all of our data. Again, my rule for Capital Research Center, if we can't document it, we don't say it in public. So all of our statistics sitting in spreadsheets. You can download our spreadsheets. You can crunch the numbers yourself for all the states, and especially for the battleground states. There is nothing remotely. There's no parity between rural and urban, and there certainly is no parity between Democrat and Republican jurisdictions.
So this is fascinating, Scott. So we've talked about these foundations. We've talked about Zuck Bucks and how they provide a get-out-the-vote advantage to the left. We're talking about election integrity here, though. What effects did the Zuck Bucks have on election integrity issues? I mean, what we just laid out was an overall advantage that the left is getting. But how did it affect election integrity on the ground?
Well, this is one of the fascinating things. There have been some studies of this. I wish there were much more. But let me give you one of my favorite examples, and it comes from Wisconsin. Now, everybody knew, both sides, Wisconsin in 2020 is going to be probably the most balanced on a knife's edge, right? It's a critical state for either party to pick up. And it was probably the most closely balanced Democrat-Republican state in the country. So, of course, it was the first state that the Center for Tech and Civic Life, which is the C3 charity that got $350 million of Zucks bucks, by the way, also got $25 million, we later learned, from Arabella Advisors Groups for this, which should end the question of whether it was partisan, because Arabella is a gigantic partisan, and that's you can go to the New York Times and find that out. You don't have to go to me and find that out. But anyway, so they got the lion's share of the money, the Center for Tech and Civic Life. And And their first grants were to five cities in Wisconsin, all Democrat, of course. And one of the things that I believe you can find in the contracts they made with the cities, because this is the point about money, right? Everybody, again, everybody knows this. If folks are giving money away, there are strings, sometimes visible, sometimes invisible, but there are always strings when you when somebody's giving you money. And so I believe if you check the contracts that they made with the cities, because they didn't give anybody money until they had a contract signed, that they expected the money to go for, among other things, unmanned drop boxes. Now, there was a lawsuit raised over this because some people claimed that Wisconsin state law did not allow for unmanned drop boxes, which, of course, are not exactly enhancers of election integrity. And alas, the Wisconsin State Supreme Court did not rule on that until years after the election. But it did rule that absolutely cannot have drop boxes under Wisconsin state law. Now, I'll add, if you just look this up on the web, you can easily find the actual state law that was at issue. You didn't need a Harvard Law degree to figure this one out. Unmanned drop boxes obviously are not permitted. You couldn't have anything that was unmanned. There was no way to get votes legally in Wisconsin to be collected without supervision of, you know, crystal clear. CTCL didn't care about that. Now, unfortunately, there were some election officials in Wisconsin that also didn't care about that. How it all came to be is a complicated story, but that it was absolutely illegal to do it, and that CTCL fully intended its monies to go toward unmanned drop boxes in Wisconsin was crystal clear. There are other scandals in Wisconsin. Again, that was one of the most egregious states in all this, and no doubt because it was one of the ones that they were had as the absolute highest priority on their list in manipulating the election. So again, you can go to our site and others and easily find these, find out what happened. In the state of Wisconsin, you had not one, but two local election officials who resigned because they were so outraged at all of the ways that the Zuckbucks charity and its fellows, by the way, the egregious person here was a guy who was the head of Wisconsin Vote at Home Institute. So the National Vote at Home Institute is, of course, one of the great enemies of election integrity. And the head of it was rewarded with a appointment by President Biden to the Postal Service board. But it was one of her colleagues in Wisconsin who became what was referred to in the emails that were, you know, dragged out of the local offices and all that. He was the grants mentor for the jurisdictions getting the Zuckbucks. And there were unbelievably egregious things, right? They were he was being given a government ID, though he was not a government employee. He was being given the keys to ballot rooms and the rest. And you won't hardly believe it until you read it all. But again, it's all documented. It's so outraged the ordinary, you know, just election officials in local jurisdictions that they would quit in disgust because it's crystal clear why. There's email after email where they're writing their colleagues and their supervisors and other elected officials saying, this person he doesn't even know what the Wisconsin rules are. He certainly doesn't care what the Wisconsin rules are. All kinds of things are being done that we know are not right. You know, so you have that kind of thing. The same thing again. Philadelphia, another place everybody knew would be ground zero for who's going to win 2020. In Pennsylvania, you find the Center for Tech and Civic Life writing the big jurisdictions where they want their money to go, telling them ahead of anybody else, hey, we're going to be announcing this and you want to be sure you come get this money. And on some of those email chains, you see not only are there the local election officials, but Democrat Party operatives also on the chain. So you have, and again, let me jump up and say, I don't trust either party. It was only a few years ago that a Republican in North Carolina so grossly violated the rules of a congressional election that the courts threw the whole election out because he was breaking the rules for elections in North Carolina. You know, like most Americans, I don't want to trust either political party, but I do want to say that billionaires and their henchmen from out of state should not come in and dictate election procedures. That is not a way to enhance election integrity.
So, Scott, 20-something states have banned Zuckbucks, from your perspective, what are the top two or three issues that we need to look out for in 2024? Some states have taken some action. What can we expect going into this next election?
I'm proud to say that 27 states at this point, with probably Wisconsin in a few months to join them to make 28, have restricted or outright banned this kind of private funds going into government election offices. But, of course, the left is the Freddy Krueger of politics. The majority of American states absolutely don't want this. And that, of course, made no difference to the Center for Tech and Civic Life. Shortly after the 2020 election, Zuckerberg announces he's never going to do that kind of money again. And on the very same day, you have headlines saying that the person that got most of his money, the Center for Tech and Civic Life, is starting a new $80 million program, really just a rebranding of itself, that they are calling the Alliance for Election Excellence. Now, Josh, you're not against election excellence, are you?
Who can be against that?
Exactly. Another thing I give the left credit for, besides that they never give up, and by the way, conservatives should remember that. The left never gives up, so we don't get to give up. I understand despair, but you're just letting the left win if you give up. So we have to keep fighting too. But the other thing I admire about them is the messaging. Boy, it's beautiful. They always have beautiful messaging. Election excellence. Now, mind you, one of the first 10 places they named as a center of election excellence was Clark County, Nevada, better known to most Americans as Vegas. Not hitherto known as a center of election excellence,
right?
Unless you're Harry Reid trying to get reelected with the help of your union cronies. However, that's just a little joke about what we're seeing here. Now, that alliance has had it's not having as much luck as Zuckbucks, because again, I've gotten calls from people around the country because they know we're the top place on Zuckbucks, and they see that this group, the Center for Tech and Civic Life, is coming to their town and trying to influence their elections, and they will come have me testify or otherwise help educate folks on the problems. So we've even had seen a place or two, a county or two that initially was sort of suckered into joining, and then they leave it or they refuse to take the money. But again, the lefties are ingenious, right? So you have these laws that make it so that the Center for Tech and Civic Life can't just cut a check to a local election office. So they've got this elaborate scheme. And in this case, I'd say go to my friends at Honest Elections Project. So honestelections.org and look up Alliance for Election Excellence there. They've got a great report on the case of North Carolina, where they did lots of FOIA requests, getting out the internal emails to see what's really going on. And what you discover is there's a complicated bait and switch. So, Josh, you're a local registrar, and I come to you for the Alliance for Election Excellence and say, Josh, you're a fabulous bureaucrat. And we love you, and we're going to give you the Center for Election Excellence. Look at this badge. You can put it on your website. You can put it on your letterhead so people know how wonderful you are. And you, of course, are flattered, and you say, great, thanks. And then I come back, and I say, by the way, Josh, you owe us dues money for that. And you, whoa, I don't have anything in my budget for that. What? And it's like, oh, that's okay. We'll give you a scholarship so you don't have to pay anything. Now, already, again, once you bring in the lawyer brigade, right? Because who knows whether a court would say that's not really giving you money. We're giving you a scholarship that's not direct money, right? So, and then they say the scholarship, by the way, is going to include credits that you can spend with our partners. By the way, two of the 8 partner groups are Arabella Advisors spawned fake groups. And again, Arabella Advisors, the most important left-wing dark money Democrat empire around. And then other left-wing groups with left-wing operatives in them and the rest. So again, now we're back in fuzzy legal territory of like, is this or is this not going to be against a ban, blah, blah. Another thing they've done is, in the case of Georgia, I loved this one, and this one got stopped, I'm proud to say. But in Georgia, what the Center for Tech and Civic Life said to one of their would-be grantees is, okay, we won't give you, the election office, the money. We'll give the county the money, because that's not against the Georgia law. It's just against the law for the local election office to get it, and then the county will give you the money. Now, that as that was happening, I'm proud to say the Georgia legislature got wind of it and tweaked their law saying that it can't private funds can't get to the election office, whatever the funky little travel may be. Now, even then, though, there's the additional thing of what we like to call Biden bucks. Our friends at Foundation for Government Accountability, I think, get credit for that great name. And that is trying to use federal funding for these same kind of Democrat turnout operations. And we've, go to capitalresearch.org and look this Biden bucks and the Department of Education up. What the Department of Education in 2022 did was they scared colleges and universities, which again, prime places for Democrat votes. And they basically threatened them with the strong implication that, you know, your kids won't get any federal government aid if you aren't registering and maybe even voting the kids on your campus. So again, the left just endless, you know, we have to be, Jefferson said, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. It's also the price of election integrity, because the left is constantly going to be finding new ways to manipulate elections and to degrade election integrity, you know, as opposed to what all ordinary Americans understand elections should be easy to vote and hard to cheat. You can do both those things at the same time. But not if the lefties get there first.
Scott, that's incredible. It sounds like we still need to be vigilant. So let me ask you this. You've been citing a lot of websites. Where can people go to find out more about all of the issues that you've talked about today?
Well, our two main websites are capitalresearch.org, and you can go there and look up all the Zuckbucks details, as well as some of the other things I mentioned. And then we also run influencewatch.org, which is basically a Wikipedia of special interests. And you, every group, every person that I named, plug those, you know, go to influencewatch.org, plug in the name Arabella Advisors or Center for Tech and Civic Life and the rest, and you will find massive documentation of exactly what's going on.
Thank you, Scott. This has been incredible. Thanks, everybody, for listening today. This is an issue that we will be hearing about and talking about a lot all through the 2024 election and beyond. Like I said at the top, this is going to be one of those issues that defines whether the right can win elections now and in the future. Thanks for joining us.